All right, this week on the big show, it's Turkey Week, and we celebrate by spotlighting our top five Thanksgiving films. Plus, Marvel lands a new Blade director, and there's several new films released this week, including Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery, The Fablemans, Strange World, and Devotion. We'll have all that and more on episode 515, Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. Let's go. All right, and welcome to the latest episode of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. I am Tim Gordon. I am joined by my man, 50 grand, Pastor Chuck, Charles Kirkland Jr. What's going on, Charles?
Not much, man. I'm just watching a little FIFA, having a good time today.
Oh, I feel you, man. I felt so bad for my folks in Argentina this morning, man. They were shocked is not the word. One of the biggest upsets in World Cup history. Saudi Arabia takes down Argentina, who was on a 36-game winning streak, or I should say a 36-game non-losing streak, because there was probably some ties in there as well. But Argentina went down today 2-1. The United States won yesterday. Well, let me take that back. They didn't win. They tied with Wales yesterday, and they have a match coming up later this week with England on Friday. So everybody is going to be locked into that. Before we begin today, go ahead, Charles. What were you about to say?
I was going to say, Saudi Arabia declared it a national holiday tomorrow because of the win in the World Cup today.
Of course they did. All right, so before we begin, Charles and I were having a conversation last night, and it slipped our mind last week that this podcast, this show, celebrated its 13th anniversary on November the 19th, which we missed last week. So, Charles, we are officially in season 13 of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon, and when we did the math, looking at 500-plus odd episodes, we're averaging about 40 episodes a year. Which, I hate to say it this way, that's a lot of episodes, man. Because if you think about television where you only getting 10 episodes a year, or you think about back in the old days where they used to do 35, 40 episodes, we're about there, man. I mean, if you figure we're not on 52 weeks a year and there's going to be some weeks that things come up, 40 episodes a year is not bad, Charles. I mean, am I wrong?
You're not wrong. I mean, we're not WWE where we're doing 52 shows a year because they're on every week, twice a week. So, I mean, hey, I think we're doing pretty good with our 40.
We're doing pretty good, man. So, congratulations to Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. Been on the air since 2009. Getting it in. 13 years. 13 is, people always equate being an unlucky number. 13 is good, man. I mean, we are rolling along, and today will be no different. So let's jump right in, Charles. The news yesterday, we talked about it several months ago when Blade lost his director about 2 months before it was about to get into production. Of course, Marvel pushed the movie back, I think, to 2025 or 4. I'm confused.
September 6, 2024.
Okay, so the movie has been pushed back, but now they found a director. And the director they have, let me see if I'm not messing this gentleman's name up. It is Yann Demange. Yann has directed, I think he directed the pilot of Lovecraft Country. He also directed White Boy Rick. And this film will be written by Michael Starberry. And I'm trying to remember, what did Michael Star? Oh, he did the inevitable something.
Defeat of Mr. and Pete.
Mr. and Pete, yeah. I remembered his name because I remember that movie. So Mike Starberry on the screenplay, Yann Demange. You've got Mahershala Ali. I'm hoping, Charles, that they find a way to bring Wesley Snipes back and give him some sort of cameo in Blade. I mean, it only makes sense since he was Blade 30 years ago. I mean, he can do something in Blade.
He could play Chris Christopherson's role from the first series. Yeah. The mentor.
So now they're talking about this Blade is going to be darker than most MCU movies. It seems like now with Black Panther, which was probably more emotional than any MCU movie, I hope Marvel is not trying to get into what I call the Warner Brothers DC kind of really pitch black sort of superhero movies that they make. That's not what you do. Let them do that. You stay over here in your lane and keep on doing the MCU. But this will not be Mahershala Ali's first appearance. We heard his voice at the end of the Eternals in an end scene. So looking forward to Blade, man. I mean, that's one of the more highly anticipated titles in the MCU that's coming up. So you're saying now September of 2024.
Yes. I mean, but if you think about Blade, it is not the lightest of franchises. Remember, in the old Blade movies were all rated R. So, you know, they're going into a world that is a little darker with vampires. And so all this other stuff is going to be, I think, and Daredevil has even been on the darker side of things. So, I mean, there's a lot of room for them to maneuver in this area and not have it be a bad movie, not a DC-style movie. So just because it's dark doesn't mean that it's depressing. So that's all I have to say about that.
I got you. All right, so we're going to take another pivot, man. And I know we talked about, before we get into our reviews, let's discuss our top five Thanksgiving films. You always notice there's a theme here. We like top five, man. I like the movie that Chris Rock did several years ago. So we incorporate top five as many times as we can. It's Thanksgiving, Charles. You got a top five list, man, because I'm telling you straight up, I wrote down 10 movies, and I got to whittle it down to five, and I'm going to do it when it's on the fly. So I'm going to end up with five. I won't add a bonus sixth in there. I'm just going to pick five and do some honorable mentions at the beginning.
You mean you're not going to cheat this week?
Wow, man. Wow.
I'm just saying. I mean,
you know, they don't call it cheating. They call it host prerogative. So what you got, man, for a top
five? So I needed to ask you this question because you said Thanksgiving movie, man, and I really don't think there's really such a thing as a real Thanksgiving movie. There's movies that have Thanksgiving.
Watch this. I'm glad you brought that up because this was a common theme, right? So a Thanksgiving film, in our estimation, would be a film that either is about, features folks eating at Thanksgiving, not just eating, because people kept putting soul food on the list. Soul food is not a Thanksgiving film. It's a film about food, soul food. So if a movie has a Thanksgiving scene in it, or it's around, it takes place around Thanksgiving, those are the films that count. So having said that, that's a good question, Charles, because I have a couple that are on the list here. So.
All right, so how are we doing this? We're gonna alternate. You do one, I do one. I'm gonna give my whole five. What are we gonna do?
Do your whole five because I'm gonna probably start off with five honorable mentions and then do my five.
What? No, you can't, man. You can't do that.
I said honorable mentions. They're not a part of the top five, but they're honorable mentions. Host prerogative.
All right, so I took a little liberty this time with my list as well. So coming in number five for me is Paul Blart Mall Cop, because it happens, you know, right at that time of Thanksgiving. Matter of fact, it starts on Thanksgiving, ends on Black Friday. A hilarious movie. I just love everything about it, and then just the second movie was so terrible, but, you know, it's a great movie for that time of year. I also have The Blind Side on my list, because there's the scene where everyone is eating those Thanksgiving, and everybody goes to watch football, and Michael Orr sits at the table, so everybody decides to come and join. Well, you know, the mother decides to make them all come and join them at the table. Number three is actually a television show. I have WKRP in Cincinnati's famous Thanksgiving episode where Mr. Coulson comes into the studio and says, As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. It's one of the most hilarious things. And I have to watch it every Thanksgiving because it's just I mean, the show was just ridiculously fun. And that one is just a landmark episode in television. So number two for me, and you know where my heart is. I couldn't put it at number one, but I really, really, really wanted to. A Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. You know, I mean, what can you do other than have a wonderful time sitting down watching Snoopy butter bread for a Thanksgiving feast that nobody shows up to? It's a great show. It's a great show. Love me some Charlie Brown. So, number one for me, it could have gone a lot of ways. And actually, I think this movie, it just came out maybe 2 years ago. And it's set around the Thanksgiving table. It's started as a play and it was adapted for the movies. And I picked The Humans as my number one Thanksgiving film. Now, if we're going to do honorable mentions, I left out Scent of a Woman because, you know, as much as I love to go, it just grabs at my soul that Al Pacino won the best at the Oscar for that movie. So it kind of taints my whole experience, but it's a good film nonetheless. So that's my only, well, I mean, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is in there as well. But so I love those films, but they don't make my top five.
All right. I'm so glad this is recorded because it just shows when we call somebody up the night before and go, this is what I want you to do because I don't want you winging it. And after sleeping on it, Charles Kirkland sort of understood the assignment, right? So I'm going to give you my list and you'll see I really understood the assignment. Charles didn't get this one. He put WKRP's Thanksgiving episode as one of his top five Thanksgiving films. Wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Better than any other. Go ahead.
You had your day in court, man. I'm gonna do my five honorable mentions, man. And it's so funny because Charles only named, like, I have 10 films. Charles only named like four that were on my list, man. Four. Coming in honorable mentions, Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, which Charles named. Honorable mention, classic, got to put it on there. Grumpy Old Men, Walter Matthau, Jack Lemmon, and Margaret. Thanksgiving scenes in that film. Really, really interesting film. This is tough because I had some that were on here that I thought were pretty good.
Oh, hold up now. Come on.
I will match Charles and put The Humans on my honorable mentions list, only for the fact that it's kind of a newer, more contemporary film. So that'll be three.
And it's at the Thanksgiving table. It all takes place on Thanksgiving.
I get that, man. But I'm saying for me, it's on my honorable mentions list, right? Because I've got some that are really in here. I got to do this, man, and because this is really not a Thanksgiving movie, but it has a Thanksgiving scene. She's got to have it. Makes my honorable intentions before the hilarious Thanksgiving scene with Nola Darling, along with her three paramours. I got to put that as an honorable mention.
You are really stretching it. That's really stretching it.
It's a Thanksgiving movie, man. Stop it. And last but not least, and I'm trying to figure out which one of these two movies do I take and put.
You were supposed to do this last night, brother. Yeah, you're supposed
I told you this
to
be go. Winging it. I got 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, so what I was left. So 1, 2, 3, 4. Is that four I just put in honorable mentions?
I think so, yes.
Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, Grumpy Old Men. Oh, I see. Okay. Well, I'm gonna have to do this, man. And I hate to do this. I'm gonna have to put this in my honorable mention. Nobody's Fool with Paul Newman. With Wacker at Thanksgiving. That was a hilarious Thanksgiving exchange. So I will put Nobody's Fool because I love this movie a lot. I love Nobody's Fool. So I'll put that as the last of my honorable mentions, which means that in no particular order, Dutch. Come on, man. How do you not put Dutch on your list? Dutch is a movie about Thanksgiving Ed O'Neill goes to get the daughter, I mean, goes to get the spoiled son to bring him home for Thanksgiving dinner. Gotta put Dutch on the list. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is literally the quintessential Thanksgiving movie. Charles put it in his honorable mention, man. Don't understand that. The Joy Luck Club. Gotta make that a part of Thanksgiving. From an Asian American or an Asian perspective, it's a really, really good movie. Home for the Holidays. Watch this. Home for the Holidays, another film, takes place at Thanksgiving. Don't understand how Charles didn't understand the excitement. And last but not least, another multicultural Thanksgiving movie, What's Cooking, from 2000. So now Lathan, a bunch of other folks. Those are my recommendations for Thanksgiving films. If you want to watch any of these films and stay in the house, these films, again, are Dutch, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, The Joy Luck Club, Home for the Holidays, and What's Cooking, my honorable mentions list.
Yeah, you can put the Joy Luck Club on after you've eaten dinner and you're sitting there and almost comatose because it's going to put you out.
Hey, a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, Grumpy Old Men, Nobody's Fool, The Humans, and She's Got to Have It on my honorable mentions list. So there you have it, Charles Kirkland.
I think your honorable mentions list is better than your top five.
Wow. Okay, well, you know, I'll take that, man. I just thought that these, to me, are the quintessential. I mean, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, man. Come on, man. That movie's been making me laugh since 1980, whatever it was, 7, I think it came out. All right, Charles.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good film. Love to see John Candy. And, it is a great film. It is a great film.
All right, sir. So here we go. We're going review heavy today. And we actually left one movie out because both Charles and I agreed that there was nothing positive to say about this movie, so why even bother?
You know, I think sometimes people love to hear us talk badly about a film, so maybe we should have done it.
Well, you know what, man? I'll tell you what, man. Just because Charles said we'll do it, let's throw it in here. I'm going to pull it up right now because I was about to start with my first film. Look at Charles over there. Are you actually happy about this?
Nothing makes me happier than getting the opportunity to trash a movie.
Wow. Okay. Well, here we go. First up, and I'm sure the folks at You Know Where are really happy to hear that we're tearing into their film yet again. Up first, we're gonna add a bonus film, a fifth film, and it's White Noise, which is gonna be in theaters this Friday. It's an apocalyptic black comedy film written and directed by Noah Baumbach, as many people remember from Marriage Story several years ago. Adapted from the 1985 novel of the same name by Don DeLillo, it is Baumbach's 11th narrative feature, Charles, and the first not to be based on an original story of his own, which, stick a pin in that, we'll talk about that, why that's problematic. The film tells the story of Jack Gladney, a professor of Hitler studies. Yes, I said it. Hitler studies. Yeah. At the college on the hill, husband to Babette and father to four children is torn asunder by airborne toxic event, a cataclysmic train accident that casts chemical waste over his town. This film stars Adam Driver, Greta Gerwig, Rafi Cassidy, Andre Benjamin, that's right, Andre 3000, Alessandro Nivola, Jodie Turner-Smith, and Don Cheadle. I will start. Both Charles and I had the opportunity to screen this film at the 10th annual Middleburg Film Fest after neither of us were able to attend the junket that was held a little earlier in the month. And I remember sitting next to a colleague, Travis Hobson, halfway through this movie, and I turned to him and I went, "They flew you up to New York to watch this movie?" He's like, "Yeah." I said, "And how was the reception in New York?" And he went, "The same as it is right now." So let's just pretty much break this thing down or skip this one because, you know, we'll just cut to the chase. Noah Baumbach, who's done Marriage Story, and Noah Baumbach, who's done so many interesting films, Greta Gerwig, Adam Driver. There's a wealth of talent in this movie, right? There's a wealth of talent behind the camera in this movie. And as we sometimes say, sometimes it just doesn't work, man. I had the feeling of watching this movie of what I call almost an out-of-body film critic experience, which pretty much means that I'm watching a story and for whatever reason, like how my hands are doing this right now and they come together and they fit, it's like watching this movie felt like this. Like the whole time, none of this stuff made any rhyme, reason, or any sense. The whole thing with with Adam Driver's character, who's the professor of Hitler studies, there's a sequence in there because Don Cheadle's a professor. And what was Cheadle's profession? I mean, what is specific stuff?
I think he was just teaching a class about suffering or pain or something. I don't know. I forgot what his specialty was, but
There's a sequence where both of them are teaching their prospective studies in a round circle. And that scene epitomizes the movie. How disjointed and it doesn't come together is a symptom of the story itself, which clearly, Charles, sounds like the kind of movie that they shared the screenplay beforehand with all the actors. And they got all excited because they were like, oh my God, this is going to be cutting edge work. And when they started doing it and seeing the dailies, they went, this is going to be trash. And before I finish, my best response to this was the next day I was talking to people at the film festival because I was trying to get a hint whether it was just me and the rest of the critic community or did the public feel different. And Charles, you remember I told you, I asked this woman, I said, well, what did you think about White Noise? She said, yeah, that was some white noise.
Yeah.
And that pretty much sums it up of how I feel about this film, which I think is a glorious failure, I will call it, of epic proportions for Noah Baumbach. And if I had to give this film a grade, man, I'm giving it like a D. I'm giving it a D. This movie did not work for me. And I heard people comparing it to Don't Look Up last year, which didn't really grab me either, but I thought it was better than this. I thought White Noise was in the title. It's like Triangle of Sadness. It's in the title. It's in the title. So that's how I felt about White Noise, man. Do you have any other comments that are different, or can you expound a little more? Because I didn't really talk too much about the story. You got a professor. He's teaching at school and this crazy class load. He's dealing with his family. His kids are very eager. There's something happening in the town that will overcome them all. And it just feels like it's almost better as a subject to discuss than a film on screen. I'll put it to you like that.
You know, the funny thing about it is I've heard a lot of people talk about the book, that the source material for the movie, and a lot of people said that the book was so complicated a read that they just never was able to get through the whole book. And so I kind of felt like I was dragged through this movie from beginning to end. The very beginning, it starts off with a scene that I thought was kind of creative in that it was truly a bunch of white noise where people were talking at each other and you couldn't really understand what was going on or figure it out. And it was just like a cacophony that was happening. And I was like, this might be creative. And then I just divulged from there and just turned into just white garbage, I would say, instead of white noise. And I think I'm becoming not a fan of Noah Baumbach because I was not a fan of Marriage Story from last year. And the only thing that was missing from this movie for me was another Adam Driver singing scene, which would have just pushed me over the edge. But the funniest thing about it, though, was when this movie was introduced to us, they told us that the best part of the film was the end credits. And so there's this wonderful end credit scene that goes on. And you know, you kind of chuckle when you hear that. But it's true. The best part of the movie is the end credits. I was happy to be there. And I think everybody else was happy to be at the end. It was not a great movie. Not a great movie. When you say D for dog, D for dumb, D for depressing, yes, I'll give it a D as well. This was not a good film. I'm sorry, Netflix. Not this time.
Wow. Okay. Well, I completely forgot about the end scene. I tried to flush a lot of what white noise was out of my head, but you're right. I thought the end scene just went on too long, and I was like, I mean, I think it's delightful, but it's just long. All right, so let's move on to our second film that we want to discuss. And, of course, that one is Devotion, which is a biographical war drama written by Jake Crane and Jonathan Stewart and directed by J.D. Dillard, who a lot of people may or may not remember from a film he did several years ago called Slight, that was pretty good. This film is based on the 2015 book Devotion, an epic story of heroism, friendship, and sacrificed by Adam Makos, which retells the true story of the comradeship between Naval Officers Jesse Brown, played by Jonathan Majors, and Tom Huttner, played by Glenn Powell, who became the U.S. Navy's most decorated, celebrated wingman during the Korean War. This film, of course, as I said, stars Jonathan Majors as Brown, Glenn Powell as Huttner, with Christina Jackson, who plays Brown's wife, Joe Jonas, Nick Hargrove, Spencer Neville, and Thomas Sadowski in supporting roles. And again, man, as in custom, I'll start. I had a chance to see this one in Toronto, man. And I remember telling Charles that I had seen The Whale, literally the film before this. And I was like, I think it's a good movie, but I'm just not really focused on it because I was still buzzing over Brendan Fraser for The Whale. So I said, I need to see this thing again. So we see it at Middleburg. And again, I think Jonathan Majors, who's the man, the proverbial man who's everywhere, you know, with his appearance coming up in a couple of months in Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. He's in, he's got something else that he's doing. That's out now.
Creed, you're talking about Creed?
Creed 3. I mean, you know, he just did, of course, you know, Heart of They Fall last year. Something else that Jonathan Majors is in, because it's like he's in a bunch of different projects all at the same time, man. So this dude, he is living, he is, you know, whoever his agent is, yeah, you need to spread the wealth, man. But Jonathan Majors stays working, man. And not just stays working, stays starring in really interesting and diverse films. And in this one, it's very interesting because when you watch it at the beginning, Jonathan Majors is the point of emphasis in the story, but it doesn't really appear that way initially, right? You see all of these other pilots that are in this group, in this small group, like five or six of them. And he's the only African-American. And he's the one that's kind of off to the side. But he's the one who's almost like the heart and soul of the unit. And as the movie sort of evolves, you sort of see Major's character just become more magnified or amplified, including a wonderful scene when they're sent to, I think it was Italy. And, you know, Jonathan Majors is out on the beach. He runs into Elizabeth Taylor. She invites him to a party. He brings his crew along. It's just, you know, I really love what they did with Jonathan Majors, Jesse Brown's character in this, and showing the friendship that develops between him and Huttner, and how much later on in the film, in the third act, that we see that friendship play out. I think Devotion was a story that I wasn't familiar with. You don't get a lot of stories of heroism from African Americans in the Korean War. And in light of him being in Lovecraft Country about a year ago, where he was a soldier in that one from sort of that same era, it just feels like there's a nice piece of continuity with the work that Majors is doing. But he's such an amazing actor who has the looks of a character actor, but the skills of a leading man. Devotion is a really good showpiece for him. I would give Devotion a B, man. I thought that there was a lot of elements that really, really worked well in this film. But you can't go wrong with Jonathan Majors at the top of the bill, or as they call it on the call sheet, number one. When number one is solid and you got a good screenplay and you got good supporting and you also are telling an important story, Devotion is really, really well done.
I totally agree. I think this is a great movie. A true story, which I did not know going into the film, at least not the outcome of how this film was going to end. And saw a clip of the trailer on television the other day, and my son remarked, Jonathan Majors really is Kang. He's jumping all around. He's in this town around, he's in that town around, he's over here, he's over there. Jonathan Majors is really hot property right now. Everywhere you turn, he's popping up. This, like you said, you're going to be in Creed 3 coming up next year. He's got Ant-Man and the Wasp. He's got Hard They Fall, Loki, Lovecraft Country, Defy Bloods, all that stuff he's been doing, and he's been doing well. And so when you get to this film, you're like, you're already knowing that he's going to be something special, which he is in this film. I really enjoyed it a lot. Like I said, I didn't know the story going into this, and when we came out of it, people were like, yeah, man, this is this. I was like, nah, I don't know everything. So when they played this, I was thoroughly impressed. I like to see the way the interactions of Black Pilot in that time was, and you had some problems with it, but I thought it was actually done rather well. And so I like Christina Jackson in this movie as Daisy Brown, the wife. A very strong performance by her. This was just an enjoyable film. I had a great time with it. It's not one of my favorite films of the year, but because it got to be a little predictable after a certain point in time. So I gave it a lower B than you did. I gave it a B, maybe a B minus as a film. I thought it works on most levels. It kind of left you feeling empty when it was over.
I got you. All right. So that was Devotion, which is in theaters this week. It's opening up. I think it opens the 23rd of this month. So, you check out Devotion if you get an opportunity. Up next is a film that I begged Charles Kirkland to come to the movies, and Charles did not come to see it. So I'm going to have to go solo on Strange World, a computer animated sci-fi action adventure film. Charles, didn't that just get you that whole description in a computer animated sci-fi action adventure film, of course, produced by Walt Disney's Animation Studios and released by Walt Disney Pictures. Charles, this is the 61st animated film produced by Disney, and the film is directed by Don Hall, written and co-directed by Kee Nguyen, and produced by Roy Conley. The film features the voices of Jake Gyllenhaal, Dennis Quaid, Jabuki Young White, who plays, well, we'll talk about him in a minute, Gabrielle Union and Lucy Liu, and follows the Clades, a legendary family of explorers who must set aside their differences as they embark on a journey to a mysterious planet named Avalonia, inhabited by surreal life forms. Now, let me tell you something, and you've heard me say this a lot on this podcast over the years, right? I sometimes purposely go into movies ice cold. I don't want to know nothing about the story. I just want to sit there for 90 minutes to 2 hours, let this director and his skill take me and his cast take me where they're going to take me. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes I'm like, man, what time is it? Why am I still here? That is not the case for Strange World. This film tells a story of, I forget the actual names, but I'll just say Father Clade and his son, right? And Father Clade is a celebrated explorer, right? And every time he's on an expedition, He takes his young son along because he wants his son to walk in his footsteps, right? And it get to a scene where maybe he's 15, 16, 17 years old, and they're out on an expedition, and they are searching for a power source, right? So where they live, they use, you know, I guess either a flower or some sort of an element that helps with their, you know, use as a power source. And the...
It's like the dilithium crystals of, you know, in Star Trek.
Bingo. So the son sees some plants that are frozen that are glowing, and the father kind of dismisses it. And they get into an argument, and the father's like, here's my compass. You find your way home. Peace, I'm out. And he leaves. And leaves his son and another group of explorers behind. You come to find out that the thing that the son finds is this amazing power source that, you know, not just powers their town, but powers like the planet, right? So everybody's like, ooh. So now he's as celebrated as an explorer as his father, who, by the way, when he bounced and left, literally left Charles. And the movie advances up 25 years. Dad is gone. The son now has a son of his own. And, you know, like there's the legend of granddad, but granddad is nowhere to be found. So now we fast forward into 25 years later. The power source that has been so plentiful over the years is starting to fade. A new expedition is put together to search for the problem with the present power source. And let's just say that, you know, nobody wins when the family feuds. We discover where granddad has been all these years. The son, who is a little envious of his grandfather, is watching now his son interact with his father, and this whole family feud thing. But it's a delightful film, man. The animation is top notch. The screenplay is really good. You know, there's always comic relief, Charles, in these Disney films. And the one that's comic relief in this, I'm not even going to tell you what it is. But, you know, let's just say that from a merchandiser standpoint, you should sell a lot of these during the holiday season. So I think that Strange World might have a strange title. It might tell you it's strange. It's a very relatable story about family, friendship, legacy, a can-do spirit. I really, really dug this film. And I'm not sure if I really dig it, Charles, because I didn't know what it was, and my expectations were down at the floor. And like any step I took, like, ooh, this is a good film. Or is it really a good film? I think I'm going to lean that it's a good film. I'm going to give it a B+. I thought Strange World was really, really strong and is enjoyable. And it's the kind of movie that I wish I had a copy of it in the house, because we would watch it over the Thanksgiving holiday. And I think the family would enjoy this film immensely, Charles.
Well, firstly, I'll say to that is welcome back, Bob Iger. I know he didn't have anything to do with this, but he can. I'm sure that he's going to find the best way to monetize the results of this film. And so, like you said, with the holidays right around the corner, I'm sure Bob Iger is thinking of stuff. So welcome back, and thank you for rising the stock price again. But Disney movies on the whole, Disney movies seem to always do very well. And I think, you know, you said you went into this without any notion of or idea of what this was. I think Disney has deliberately kept people in the dark as to what this film is, so that when you get into the theater, that you become pleasantly surprised about the quality of the film. I wish that I had the ability to get to see it, because everything I've heard about it is that this movie is quite a gem, and I plan to see it sometime real soon. I got some free tickets coming my way, so I might have to rush out to the theater over this Thanksgiving weekend and check it out.
All righty, which leads us to our next film, which I know there's going to be a lot of discussion on, and that film, of course, is The Fabelmans, a coming-of-age drama directed by Steven Spielberg and written and produced by Tony Kushner and Spielberg. And it is a semi-autobiographical story loosely based on Steven Spielberg's adolescence and first years as a director, told through an original story of the fictional Sammy Fableman, aka Steven Spielberg, a young aspiring filmmaker who explores how the power of movies can help him see the truth about his dysfunctional family and those around him. The film features an ensemble cast that includes Gabrielle LaBelle as Sammy, with Michelle Williams, Paul Dano, Seth Rogen, and Judd Hirsch in supporting roles. Spielberg dedicated this film to the memories of his real-life parents, Arnold Spielberg and Leah Adler. Charles Kirkman, you talking about a movie I was really looking forward to seeing, man. I love Steven Spielberg, man. Spielberg, over a course of 40 years, man, has delighted me in his storytelling. He's a really good storyteller, whether it's the action stuff with, like, Raiders, you know, making the hair stand up on the back of our necks in films like Jaws, you know, when he wants to tell a story, you know, that is of social consequence, Schindler's List, The Color Purple. I mean, Spielberg, Saving Private Ryan. You know a couple of things that are going to happen going into a Spielberg movie, that it's going to always be on the side of sentimentality, as I famously called War Horse, Poor Horse, because it was like he was just begging, like, I'm going to get them tears out of you. You're going to cry. So I love Spielberg, man, and I know going in that his movies are going to, they're going to touch me in a certain way, and I was really looking forward to this film. And I have a couple of thoughts, man, because clearly the movie tells a story of based on his real life, but this genius that is his father, and this really free spirit that is his mother. And they've got a friend there, Uncle Benny. Is it Benny or is it Bernie or Benny?
Benny.
Uncle Benny. So Uncle Benny's always around. And how that plays out in the story is also very interesting. But young Steven, I keep calling Sammy young Steven Spielberg. Young Sammy is having a hard time, man, because the father is like a genius and he's like a computer guy, pretty much. And he is moving his family around because there's so many opportunities for him, to kind of do what he does, you know, in the computer space. And he's wooed by all the major companies, whether it's IBM and all of these. And he's moving his family around where he's happy because he's doing the work he wants to do. But his family, not so much, Charles, because the mother is in a situation which we really won't go into because I don't want to spoil that. She's having some issues. The kids are having issues, bouncing around from school to school. Is very anti-Semitic, painfully anti-Semitic at some points in this film. And, you know, as his family situation starts to come to light, there's this great scene where, you know, young Sammy is making a movie about, you know, his mother and a camping trip. And in that film, man, there are some revelations that come out that Sammy figures out first before everybody else does. And and the whole time I'm sitting there watching it, Charles, I'm like, man, must have been a hell of a childhood, man. For a kid to have, man. Like, wow. Woo. That was an interesting childhood, man. But I think the thing about the Fablemans that I will just sum it up really quickly is that I wanted this movie to be great. And it's just good. It didn't blow me away. I think one of the best scenes in the film literally happens in the third act, Charles. Like, where's the horizon? that was great. That was a great inclusion into the film, which is also based on a true story, which when you see the movie, you'll see what I'm talking about. Just stay in the theater after the film and just Google the third act and you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about, man. But I really wanted this movie, Charles, to blow me away. And, you know, you just heard me say previously, we were talking about strange world that I had no expectations in. I felt like anything I did, that movie, or like anything positive that was there, I'd be like, woo, this is a good movie. Where in this chain, in the Fablemans, my expectations were up here, and I might have got here. So I just thought it was good. I wanted it to be great. So what did you think about the Fablemans?
Wow. Okay, so first of all, my question is, why did we had Belfast last year, and we had our Moldovar's film the year before that. All these people are telling these stories about their lives. Why did Spielberg feel the need to change the name? Why couldn't he just call it My Life or The Spielbergs or something like that instead of The Fablemans? I don't understand that. And then he stretches out his experience, because that scene that you talk about in the last act really happens a lot earlier in his life, but in the film it happens much later. So he made the room to explain and get in depth on stuff, but he just didn't go there. So there was a little bit of an emotional disconnect in the film. I mean, he got you on the highs where you're laughing and enjoying and everything, and then he got you on the lows where things are really sad. But that there was that in between space where you just kind of felt like this isn't really moving me the way I think it should have. And yeah, I think there was a lot of expectation on this film that this is going to be great. And I will say that this is really I went back and I thought about it. This is really a good film. It's really enjoyable. It's very delightful. I had a wonderful time laughing and interacting with the film. But when it was over, it was just over. It wasn't like it made the impression on me that I was like, wow, this is a great film. And so, yeah, I'm kind of in the same place that you are. It's a really good film. It really is a good film. And if you have no preconceived notions as you go into this film, I think you'll love the film. Spielberg again, I mean, he did it with West Side Story, and we went into that one expecting it to be bad, and it was really a great movie. And so this one, I think if we had gone into it thinking it would be bad, we would be ecstatic about it, but Spielberg just sets that bar, and so we want more, and it just really didn't give it to us the way we really wanted it. So yeah, it's a good film. I think Cindy Williams, Michelle Williams is wonderful in this film, and she does a lot of work, and very intimate work where she's framed right in the view of everyone a lot of times in this film. So she does a really great work, even with that weird bob that she was wearing. It was kind of mystifying, but she was interesting to see in this film, and I think she was like the emotional core of the film. Even though the film was really more about Sammy, I think Michelle Williams did a lot of great work in this film, so I enjoyed it. I kept expecting Paul Dano to do something about the Riddler in this, because he had that same kind of look to him from the Batman, but you know, I guess that's just the way Paul Dano looks. So, but I really appreciated Michelle Williams' work in this film, and Gabriel Labell, he does a great job as Sammy. So it's a really good movie. It's just not really a great movie, and it's not one of those I'm like, at 2 hours and 31 minutes, you don't expect me to say this more off as much, but I needed some more time in this film. I needed some more something in this film, and it was good. It was good, just not great.
All right, so I would give The Fablemans a B. To your point, I think I can't go higher, but it feels like a B to me. Charles?
There's times when I come home from a film, and if there's a film that's really good, I'm excited to. I'm like, this is better. It just didn't work for me in this one. So, yeah, B, maybe a B minus on this one for me. It's not the best movie of the week.
All right, and coming up as our final movie we want to talk about this week, and of course that's Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery, which is a murder mystery film written and directed by Rian Johnson, who co-produced it with Ram Bergman and it is the sequel to the 2019 film Knives Out, bringing back Daniel Craig, who reprises his role as Benoit Blanc. Love saying Benoit Blanc. A master detective taking on a new case. And in this film, tech billionaire Miles Braun, played by Ed Norton, invites his friends and detective Benoit Blanc for a murder mystery party getaway on the Glass Onion, his private Greek island. When someone dies, Blanc must crack the case and discover who the killer is. The film features a new ensemble cast consisting of Ed Norton, Janelle Monáe, Katherine Hahn, Leslie Odom Jr., Jessica Henwick, Madeline Klein, Kate Hudson, and David Bautista. Man, wow. I went into this movie. I saw, it's neither here nor there, but I saw two world premieres of this movie. One in Toronto, another one in Los Angeles. And let's just say, cut to the chase. Miles Braun, Ed Norton, is like a genius inventor, tech billionaire. And he sends all of his friends this elaborate box that's a mystery that they got to figure out, right? So you got to be smart enough to even open the box to get the invite out, which invites you to the Glass Onion on this Greek island, right? Once there, or even before we get there, you see all the different personalities emerge from all his friends. And then there are a couple of mystery folks. Janelle Monáe's character shows up. And everybody's like, well, what is she doing here? And nobody knows who Benoit Blanc is, but you will find out soon. If you don't know, now you know. You get to the island. There's all sorts of drama. We meet Miles Braun, who is explaining to Benoit Blanc how he brought all these people together because he wants to play this murder mystery game, which is all good, as Al Roker would say. It's all fun and games until somebody loses an eye. And in this film, it was all fun and games until somebody really dies and Blanc has to get to work. And I think what was sensational about this film is that it shows it to you on the surface level, like what you can see. And then it takes us back through a bunch of, not necessarily flashbacks, but different perspectives. So you can really understand everybody's motivation through flashbacks. I will just say this. I said it 2 months ago. I said it a month ago. I said it a couple of weeks ago when we went to LA. I'll say it again. This movie is way better than the first one. The first one I liked a lot is way better than that, man. You got bigger ideas, bigger cast. You got the Netflix put a bunch of money into it, and you see it all on the screen. Daniel Craig, who many people only know as James Bond, has a tremendous comedic sense of timing, and it works well in these Glass Onion whodunit films. Rian Johnson, who Charles and I had the benefit of, or the pleasure, I should say, when we were in Middleburg, we were like, dude, Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery. I'm giving this movie an A. It is easily the best movie this week. It is going to play in theaters starting tomorrow for a week, and then it's going to black out, and then it'll show up again on Netflix right around Christmas, I think the 23rd of December. If you don't get a chance to see it in the theater, please, please, please check it out and then sit down with your family at Christmas time. This movie is a lot of fun. And if you get a chance to take your family out for Thanksgiving, Knives Out, trust me, that's the movie you want to see this weekend. Charles Kirkland, what did you think about this film?
Also, if you haven't heard our interview with Rian Johnson, I say check that out because Rian happens to drop a big surprise bombshell in our interview with him. So if you don't get to see that or hear that, you're missing out. So check out our interview that we did with Rian Johnson. It was like Tim said, it was a delight because I found out that Rian Johnson is an Agatha Christie fan, just like I was growing up reading all these books. And so this whole Benoit Blanc character just is a hearkening to Agatha Christie and Hercule Poirot or Ms. Marple, any of these detective geniuses that you could think of. And so I going into this film, and I'm not sure, because I gave the first Knives Out was an A for me. So how can you make a better movie than an A? And so I sit through this film and I'm like, this is a better movie than the first one. And I love the first one. There's a lot of things, but there's a mystery inside of a mystery, and just like a glass of an onion, you got to peel all the layers off to get down to the center of this tale. I mean, it's wonderfully done. Every time I see Dave Bautista, I'm thinking he's a much better actor than a lot of. I think of the wrestlers turned actor, I think Dave Bautista has the most range of all these actors, because John Cena, The Rock, they all play pretty much that same character, but Dave Bautista, he's just all over the place, and he's just showing that he has range, and I appreciated that about him. Daniel Craig is wonderful, Edward Norton, this whole cast is incredible, and so just like the first one, when it all comes together and stuff goes down, and Benoit Blanc steps in, this is a great ride, and I enjoyed everything about this film, except for maybe the ending. I don't think I enjoyed the ending of this film as much as I did the first one, because it's totally different. It's a totally different type of ending, but it was really good. I mean, yeah, I give it an A as well. You would think that because this is better than the last one, I don't know. It's just got to stay at that A level. I can't give it an A plus because it's not a perfect film, but I would give it an A. It's definitely the movie of the week. It's definitely, and Netflix is right to be pushing this movie for Academy Award considerations, which is what they're doing, which is why it comes out for this 1 week, and then it disappears until Christmas time. So catch it in the theaters. I don't know what it's like to look at a TV screen for this one, but it's so big and spectacle, it needs to be seen in theaters. I wish they would just go ahead and give it a full theatrical run, because that's where it needs to be seen. So
I agree. I absolutely agree. It's the one light movie in a whole season of dark, kind of heavy movies. So that's why, another reason why I think it sticks out. So, Charles, we got 2 minutes left, man. And I just saw something on Variety that I think we should hit. I read a couple months ago that James Samuels, who did The Heart of They Fall, had his next movie ready to go. And it was going to be called The Book of Clarence. They have changed the title now to Pins and Needles. And this film stars Omar Sy, who many people will know from Lupin. And the what was the other film he did that was his breakthrough film? Not The Untouchables, but The Intouchables?
Intouchables,
Yes. And Lakeith Stanfield, who was Darius on Atlanta, filming started on this black biblical comedy last week over in, well, I'll get to that in a second. The film, formerly known as The Book of Clarence, Pins and Needles, marks Samuel's follow-up to his directorial debut, the stylish black western, The Heart of They Fall, which also starred Stansfield and represented a new take on the western genre. Cameras started rolling last week on his new film in the ancient southern Italian town known for its prehistoric whitewashed caves, the same locale, Charles, where Mel Gibson shot Passion of the Christ, which most recently hosted Garth Davis's Mary Magdalene, as well as Tamir Bekmambetov's Ben-Hur remake. So this movie, which they're saying they're going to use 2,000 black extras in this, is going to be a comedic take on the biblical story, which is supposed to represent another book in the Bible. Looking forward to The Book of Clarence, AKA Pins and Needles. So we will check that out. We will give you more as more comes out about it. And we reviewed 5 movies this week. The last one, I'm not even going to tell you, because if you watch the show, the last one is the one you should be seeing. On behalf of Charles Kirkland, as we tell you every week, please see something good at the movies, man. If you can't find one movie out of the 5 we gave you, minus the first one, I don't know what to tell you. Enjoy your holiday. I would tell you to eat something good. We all eating the same things. So enjoy your look at Charles. Enjoy your holiday. And we will see you next week. You take care, man. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Go USA.
Go USA. Take care, man. Enjoy.